Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Friday, February 5th, 2016. Authorities in Western Equatoria released several youth who were arrested for months.
We were able to release up to about 40 boys who were in custody of the security agency. And some of them have been around since last year, and these were boys who were caught in some of the operations that were conducted in the areas of Maridi.
And South Sudan is asking Zimbabwe to help address the acute human resource problems in the country.
We are expecting from Zimbabwe at least to help us with trained teachers and also lecturers who can help in our universities, also in the area of nursing, where we need some nurses in our hospital, like midwives, because our maternal mortality rate is very high.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. A South Sudan opposition leader says a transitional assembly should be reconstructed before forming executive branch of the transitional government of national unity. The minority leader in South Sudan's parliament says a fully restructured parliament is needed to incorporate the peace deal into the constitution. But ruling party members do not agree. Minority leader Anyoti Odigo, who is also a member of the Democratic Change Party, says officials nominated by the SPLM should first be allowed to join the parliament so they can work with the government lawmakers to pass crucial legislations to form the transitional government of national unity.
In fact, if we come to reality, the president has already decreed the members of IO, 50 members of IO. How can this parliament now try to continue sitting, passing bills into law when there are members who are staying out? They are interested in what? In the formation of the government of national unity. Which comes first? I think parliament should be first. And then comes what? The government of national unity.
Adigo says the 68 new members of parliament who will be appointed in accordance with the peace agreement, as well as the 18 lawmakers dismissed in 2014 after joining the rebellion, should be sworn in immediately.
So that it becomes one parliament in order to implement the agreement. It is not the government of national unity which can implement the agreement. It is the parliament, because whatever the minister, the council of ministers passes will come to parliament, like the new constitution which they are supposed to be.
Deng Dao, SPLM ruling party MP representing Twitch East from Jonglei State, disagrees. Dao says the ministerial communique of IGAD countries, which called for formation of transitional government, has been adopted by all parties to the peace agreement.
We felt that it is important to form the government first, because the assembly is being expanded and reconstituted. So they can go concurrently, but the most important is the formation of the government first, so that if the first vice president and the vice president are appointed and the cabinet is appointed, automatically the next can be the assembly. There's no harm on this.
Dao says, unlike parliament, the executive branch of the government could restore confidence among South Sudanese who have been divided by the 2 years of conflict.
There's a need that people have to open up a new page, so that we now put a page of war, page of peace talk, separate, and we open a new page of reconciliation, page of peace.
Dao says he is confident a new parliament will soon sit after the interim government is formed. According to the August peace agreement, a new speaker who hails from Equatorial Region will be nominated as the speaker for the transitional assembly during the first sitting. The IGAD communique released on Sunday does not address when a transitional national assembly will be constituted. Adigo did not say if he will raise his concerns on the parliament floor. Even if he doesn't, it will not go through because his side does not have the votes he needs for a passage. Philip Tonaleo in Juba prepared that report. Zimbabwe and South Sudan's ministers of education, science and technology have signed a memorandum of understanding to educate South Sudanese students and share expertise. South Sudan's Minister of Foreign Affairs, Barnaba Marial Benjamin, says 200 South Sudanese students are already in Zimbabwe on scholarship, studying engineering, medicine, and other fields of expertise. He says several Zimbabwean nurses and teachers will also head to South Sudan to help build the capacity. Marielle tells VOA's Ndemiaki Mwakhelele, South Sudan is a safe place.
The Minister of Education, Science and Technology signed a memorandum of understanding with the Minister of Education, Science and Technology of the Republic of Zimbabwe, and by offering over 200 scholarships to different universities and teachers' colleges in Zimbabwe so as to have the capacity for our students and to help the training and higher education for the children of South Sudan. And our Minister of Higher Education, Science and Technology is already on his way to Zimbabwe in order to complete some of the areas which are required to be finished and clarified.
What areas of expertise are you seeking, and how did this come about?
These are South Sudanese students going to study in Zimbabwe, in the colleges of engineering, of medicine, of veterinary sciences, of teachers' training, also of in the area of paramedical services. Zimbabwe has colleges which can accommodate our students in their universities. So it is our students going on scholarships to Zimbabwean universities.
How many students are going to Zimbabwe? Have they already left from South Sudan?
200 students have already left for Zimbabwe for various colleges and various universities, about 200 already.
And now what about from Zimbabwe coming to South Sudan? We understand that there is some kind of agreement in that respect as well.
Yes, we are expecting from Zimbabwe at least to help us with trained teachers and also lecturers who can help in our universities. Also in the area of nursing, where we need some nurses in our hospital, like midwives, because our maternal mortality rate is very high. So we need to improve the area of women's health. So we are getting trained teachers, both in health and education. And Zimbabwe has a large number of those people who are trained. You find them even in United States, in Britain. They have a lot of trained personnel in those advanced countries, leave alone South Sudan, where we have a high need.
Dr. Benjamin, with all that is going on in South Sudan, you keep hearing about the ongoing conflict and instability. Is this a safe environment for these students to come from Zimbabwe?
It is absolutely safe. We are now implementing a peace agreement, as you know. We have already agreed on peace. The advanced team of opposition parties and the rebellion are already inside South Sudan, and we are implementing peace process.
Now, what is your expectation of the exchange from Zimbabwe to South Sudan, from South Sudan to Zimbabwe?
Because first, it is an African environment. The conditions are hard. I'm sure they can be able to bear that. We have minimal environment that we provided. I think that we can be able to do that. So I think generally it is good. It is good in the sense that we will get from willing countries that can assist us. Mm-hmm. So that process is going on. We cannot afford to get from countries like the United States or Britain. We don't have the money to give them. That's why we get some humble African countries that can come and help us in capacity building programs, especially in the area of education and health.
So you're saying South Sudan is getting some kind of a donation of expertise. You're not paying for it because South Sudan does not have the money.
No, we will pay for it, but not as high as is expected, but we'll be able to pay the minimum we can pay.
Now, you said there are other countries involved. Which other countries are you also getting this expertise from, or you are engaging in this contract?
From Kenya, from Uganda, from Egypt, from Ethiopia. These are countries, South Africa, these are countries helping us.
And this is something that...
That's Barnaba Marielle Benjamin, South Sudan's Minister of Foreign Affairs, speaking with Ndemiaki Mwakhelele of Studio 7 from here in Washington. South Sudanese civil society activists say a new bill passed by Parliament this week restricting activities of non-governmental organizations is deeply flawed and should be corrected. The bill is expected to be signed by President Salva Kiir. Nabil Biagio has more for VOA from Juba.
The motion has been passed. The observation on the NGO Bill 2016 has been passed by this House and will be sent back to the President for action. Thank you very much.
That is Tulio Odongi, the SPLM ruling party's chief whip, announcing the bill's passage. The bill requires that NGOs hire 80% of their staff from South Sudan. While observers say that will create jobs for South Sudanese nationals, they fear the country lacks the capacity to provide qualified people to fill the majority of NGO positions. Aid agencies and human rights groups have widely criticized the legislation. Opposition leader Onyoti Adigo opposes the amended bill becoming law on procedural grounds.
What happened today was unconstitutional because according to what usually happens, if the bill is sent to the president and then he doesn't want to assent to it, it should come to back to parliament within 1 month. When it stays there 1 month, within 30 days, then it becomes a law already. So two things should have happened. It should have become a law. And they should have to bring this now as an amended law.
Adigo says the observations President Kiir added to the NGO bill were supposed to be tabled for discussion by the MPs, and instead of incorporating them into the bill after 30 days have elapsed. Adigo also says the newly appointed 50 SPLM in opposition members of parliament should have been part of the process. They did not participate. Aside from the 80% South Sudanese staff requirement, the bill also forces NGOs to register with the government. And it sets up a government committee that would monitor their activities. Edmond Yakani is the executive director at the Community Empowerment for Progress organization, OSEPO.
The bill have given the government power to audit the NGOs' accounts, which we're still waiting. How is that going to be done? So that can be reflected through the rules and the regulations.
The new law also regulates where NGOs can work in South Sudan. Yakani and other activists say the work of NGOs should not be restricted in South Sudan. Yakani also has a problem with the way non-governmental organizations is defined in the new law.
It's a law that says non-governmental organization law, but if you look at the content or the focus of the law, the focus is mainly on humanitarian and disaster management. Sort of like all the work of non-governmental organizations were only centered towards responding to humanitarian situation and disaster management.
Angelina Daniel, Regional Director of End Impunity, a local human rights group, says her work would be hindered without the freedom to move and work countrywide.
The Commission of IA Relief and Rehabilitation will direct the humanitarian actor to go to a specific place. But for human rights activists, we have to monitoring everywhere, and our working is everywhere, cover all the country. So this is my concern.
Human rights lawyer Benny Gideon is more concerned about what he calls restrictive clauses regarding how NGOs must register with the government.
It says that the registrar may serve the organization with a written notice that you are rejected. But that written notice, there is no timeline. After how long can the registrar notify the organization that you have been rejected for registration? And there is no appeal mechanism, because whatever the decision a registrar of organization does in the light of this law is binding and final.
Gideon also takes issue with a provision requiring NGOs to disclose the source of their funding when they register. He says NGOs often do not know their funding sources when they register. Last May, Parliament passed a similar bill regulating the work of NGOs, but it was never signed into law. The President's office did not explain why President Kiir did not sign the bill. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biagio in Juba.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, traditional chiefs say they need more protection. That story after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
do you believe in fate?
Actually, I do. Because if anyone would tell me that I would still be standing here today, I wouldn't believe. Because I once had a terrible accident when I was in SS3, and this Dangote trailer actually passed on top of me, and I was underneath. And if anybody comes and tell me that such accident could happen and someone will survive, I won't believe. So I so much believe in fate.
I do believe in faith, because when you have faith, it makes you have hope. And when you have hope, you overcome everything in life.
I do believe in faith because it's something which is already there, put like it's part of human.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. Military officials in Maridi State have released dozens of youth who were detained for months following clashes between local vigilante group called the Arab Boys and government forces. The youth were handed over to the Maridi State governor, who in turn handed them over to their families yesterday. Gift Friday has the story for VOA from Juba.
Governor Mande says the youth were released as part of an amnesty program President Salva Kiir approved for anti-government groups who agreed to lay down their weapons. Soldiers and national security operatives arrested the youth following clashes in July between locals and pastoralists from Lake State in Maridi County. Governor Mande says those youths were freed after talks between state authorities and security operatives.
This morning, we as a state authorities, along with the security agencies, we were able to release up to about 40 boys who were in custody of the security agencies. And some of them have been around since last year, and these were boys who were part in some of the operations that were conducted in the areas of Maridi and some parts of Western Equatorial, who were participating in some kind of rebel activities. You know, so as a part of the implementation of the amnesty of the president, we decided that there's no reason to keep these boys.
Governor Mande says the youth were released unconditionally, which he says demonstrates Mr. Kiir's decision to implement amnesty for armed groups fighting his government. Wilson Alfred, one of the released youth who spent 3 months in detention, says he was kidnapped by the leader of the Arab Boys, James Kabila. Alfred says he was forced to fight against the government.
The politics of deceiving people and encouraging them to go to the booth is not good. There are children suffering in the booth where there are no roads. Let us return to our government. Maridi is now our state. Why should we remain in the booth? If there is anyone who fears to come out of the booth, that something will happen to him or her, the example is my voice today, the voice of Wilson Alfred Ramba. I have been freed from prison today and I am free.
Joyce Nelson was also freed yesterday after spending 4 months in prison. She says security forces arrested her when she tried to take slippers to her husband at his hiding place in the bush.
Prison is not a good place to be. What I can say is those boys who are still in the bush should come out so they can live well. Whoever has been calling us names should stop laughing at us. They have problems.
Earlier this week, Maridi State authorities appealed to local vigilantes still hiding in the bush to lay down their arms and return home. Governor Mande says since the appeal, 4 young men turned themselves to the authorities. He says a known number of vigilantes have also returned voluntarily to their villages. Mande urged the youth freed yesterday to promote peace in their communities.
These are our brothers, these are our boys, these are our sons. They should be reintegrated back into their homes, into their communities, and they should not be treated as if they are lepers.
Mande says the released youth should interact normally in their communities and continue to preach the message of peace, unity, and prosperity. For VOA News, I'm Gift Friday in Juba.
Traditional leaders in communities around Wau are asking for protection from state authorities as they carry out their duties. During a one-day forum organized by Community Empowerment for Progress organization, the chiefs also demanded for more respect and recognition of their role in their communities. Michael Atit has more for VOA from Wau.
At least 25 traditional chiefs gathered in Wau yesterday to talk about how they monitor human rights, while they perform their community duties, which include presiding over customary courts. 51-year-old Emanuela Isidoro, one of the female traditional chiefs attending the forum, says sometimes traditional leaders are undermined by politicians. As a result, she says, some citizens have also begun to undermine the rule of law of traditional chiefs. Isidoro says state authorities should protect traditional chiefs. Last year, two traditional chiefs were killed in Wau County, while three others narrowly escaped attack by unknown gunmen. Isidoro also says chiefs are complementing work of the government. She says the working conditions for many traditional leaders are not encouraging.
There are a lot of challenges facing chiefs. For example, many of them are politicized and they are not free to carry out their duties as traditional chiefs. Many chiefs are appointed instead of being elected by the community, according to the Local Government Act of 2008. They are also not being given their incentives.
Edward Issa Ferdinand, a senior local government officer in Wau, admits that some provisions of the Local Government Act pertaining to traditional leaders are not being implemented. Issa says the traditional chiefs should not engage in politics so they can remain neutral on sensitive topics in their communities.
We have got the Local Government Act, which regulates them, the chiefs. We should go according to the law, the Local Government Act. The book is there, the local government is there, but unfortunately enough, it is not implemented in the way it should be implemented. So we want to activate it so that we come up on track.
Stephen Bedgorni Musa, SEPO's project officer in Wau, says during four previous forums, chiefs repeatedly complain about the same things brought up at this forum. Musa calls on political leaders and communities to support the work of traditional leaders.
Some of them are raising this issue of not being respected by the government officials, and also the privileges they're supposed to enjoy is not there, and also the issue of security. So they have seriously recommended that the government should work on those issues, at least giving them protection, and also giving them the respect that they previously used to have.
Chiefs say providing security and respecting their dignity will help them carry out their duties, including protecting human rights and providing access to justice. Philip Ilario Pio, chief of Daraja West Residential Area in Wau, says he learned quite a bit from yesterday's forum.
Yalla ena ligina inu aslan.
We learned that some chiefs do not know which case should be referred to a civil court, and I have learned also which procedure should be followed to refer any case.
Chief Pio says he also learned that in more serious cases involving murder, they must be taken to a high court. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Wau.
A South Sudanese partner in an Australian firm says he has had to overcome many obstacles to become a successful lawyer. He says the biggest difficulty was convincing himself he could accomplish what he set out to do. Ayen Biro has more from Washington.
Deng Adit says it took him years to realize that he had to stop blaming the world for his battered self-esteem and frustration over what he describes as a difficult childhood. Now a resettled refugee in New South Wales, Australia, Adit is a founding partner of the AC Law Group, which he helped establish in 2014. He says his success as a law partner is a testament for anyone discouraged by past failures or told they will never succeed.
It's not only a wake-up call for people that are disadvantaged or a boy from South Sudan that just came in and tried to make a positive step toward, take a positive step toward education or other career. So I think it's almost like a domino effect in terms of looking at the youth need to wake up in general, because it's their world in general. They own it, and hopefully the future will be brighter if they take care of it.
Since moving to Australia in 1998, the 32-year-old Adit says he has had to work twice as hard as other people to accomplish his goals. For one, Adit says he read anything he could find to strengthen his English. He worked small jobs while earning his undergraduate and graduate degree, eventually went to law school at the University of Western Sydney. But before any of that happened, Adit says he had to find confidence in his personal abilities.
The first obstacle is myself. actually belief in myself, my ability to do certain things. Secondly is then a reflection on how I progress in the society by the fact that I do not, in the first place, believe that I do belong in this society. Those obstacles are very, very nasty to many refugees.
Adut says being the subject of racial discrimination has always been difficult. His self-esteem took a beating, especially during his teenage years in Australia. Adut eventually decided to toughen up. Adut says he decided the strongest weapon to fight indifference was education. He worked hard in school, got good marks, and earned a scholarship to study law. He was unsure that he would find a job after law school, but decided to remain hopeful.
The fact that I was scared that nobody would be able to hire me has nothing to do with the legal industry or that we are supposed to hire me. It was just on myself belief that I won't be able to fit in. And other obstacles, including a bit of discrimination there, which I think it should have not taken me more than a year or so to be able to say that, well, I can deal with it in a different way, because discrimination is something that is embedded in human society.
Adut says his professors really helped him get the confidence he needed to become a positive role model.
And that's including the fact that you've got to have a thick skin on how people treat you. You can't just run it and say, well, I've been discriminated, and go on and become a nuisance. You just become like them. So I don't see myself being in that position anymore. Playing victims is the problem. How long can I play the victim?
As part owner of AC Law Group, which focuses on family, criminal, and property law, Adut says he is humbled to be able to use the Australian courts to bring justice to his clients while delivering hope to young South Sudanese in Australia. For VOA News, I'm Ian Bior in Washington.
And that's our show for this Friday, when I'll leave you with the song Oh Yeah by Dynamic.
Yeah. Dynamic in your party, yeah. I come to run your city, red. Sudanese child in this nation, yeah.
Listening to Dynamic with the song Oh Yeah. I'm sure you are in a dancing mood. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Have a safe and peaceful weekend. Join us again next week for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.